We I think all of us do have a copy of the agenda in front of us. No, thank you very much. We have invited the high level panel for it to take us through on some of the issues which, as you were moving around, you have listened with the understanding that you did come to Parliament at some stage to take us through as members of Parliament in all different sectors, including health. So you are not coming for the first time to Parliament, but you are coming for the first time to the Portfolio Committee. And if my memory serves me well, in that session, all members of Parliament, irrespective of the political parties, where it was in the, just for the, to remind members, it was in the old assembly chamber where the panel, the majority of the members of panel came to make that presentation. Having said that, it's welcoming you, Dr. Chisano. You are not a stranger in the field of health. For the benefit of those that may not know her, she was the first DG, if I'm not mistaken, in 1994 of the Department of Health. At that time, I was in my other deployment as an activist in the health sector. That's why I happened to know at the time that day I was in the leadership of the trade union. Having said that, we will we'll go into the second item of our agenda, which is the introduction. For the benefit of those that may be coming for the first time in our committee, we all introduce ourselves, we use the mic, our phones are to be on silent, we don't take photos, it's only those that are designated to do that. The presentation will be made by Professor Chisano, questions will only be asked by members, and it will be here that will be responding. If our guests that are here want to ask questions, they will ask questions during break. I'm Lindelwa Tunjwa, I'm the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Health. Next to me is Vuyoka Zimajalamba, who's the secretary of the committee. At the back, extreme left, is Lindo Kuhle, who is our content advisor. Next to her is Moses, who's part of the research. At the extreme, against the wall, is Mbali, who's the committee assistant. I will then hand over to members to introduce themselves. Thank you.
Good morning, all. My name is Lindy Wilson. I'm a member of Portfolio in this house. Thank you.
Dumelang.
Sanbonani Moleni Mbulele Nkonzo, a member of the Lungu and a committee is a bureau.
Good morning, everyone.
My Mashubanzi Machapta, a member of the committee.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Lungiswa James, member of this committee.
Good morning. My name is Fish Mahlalela.
Prof, I'm handing over to you, then it is the guest.
Good morning, my name is Aisha Ali and I'm from the PMG Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Good morning, my name is Ahmad Patel and I'm a visitor here.
Visitor from where?
I'm just actually accompanying my wife here. She's with a PMG and I'm just sitting in a meeting.
Professor Chisano, we'll hand over to you. I think you are the only one. I don't think there's any need for an introduction. If you want to introduce yourself, it's fine.
My name is Olive Chisano, and I currently work as a special advisor to the President on social policy. And I'm going to be speaking today on behalf of the high-level panel, which was in existence at the time. It's no longer in existence. So what I'm presenting today is what we prepared when we were working under former President Motlanthe as part of the high-level panel. And at the time, I was chair of the Poverty, Unemployment, Inequality Working Group.
All right, we'll hand over to you, Prof, to take us through.
Okay. What I want to try to do first is just to touch bases on just putting in a context to talk about the health status of the population before we really come to the issues, two big issues that we looked at in terms of access to care and as well as the quality of healthcare and the recommendations that the panel made. In terms of the health status of the South African population, I must say that we are improving very rapidly in the sense that we exceeded the target set for 2014 and we exceeded those by 2012. And those are in relation to life expectancy at birth, which has increased and exceeded the 2014 target by 2012, and that's in the report itself, and I'm assuming that you all have copies of the report. And then secondly, that the adult mortality has decreased much faster than the 2014 target, and again surpassing it by 2012. In other words, we've suddenly seen fewer deaths, fewer funerals, And consequently, obviously, fewer orphans in the country. The under 5 mortality, the infant mortality, and neonatal mortality also decreased by about 10%. Now, you can ask why, what happened? Well, the biggest change that we have seen is the government's programmatic efforts, which related to the access to antiretroviral therapy. That in itself has really helped quite a lot. Secondly, the free prevention of HIV transmission from mother to child, that program that was free, helped a lot in terms of reducing mortality among children. And also the program that the government had introduced in terms of vaccination against, you know, pneumococcal pneumonia and retrovirus diarrhea in infants has made a difference. So in this area, we have made quite a big difference. Of course, during that period, we've had problems with regard to non-communicable diseases, which have started rising in terms of diabetes, hypertension, you know, cardiovascular diseases and cancer. Now, coming into the legislative issues related to the cost and affordability of healthcare services, I would want to start by saying that we are fortunate that we have the Constitution that actually guides us in terms of what are the rights, the health rights of the population. They are entrenched, and these are entrenched in Section 27 as well as Section 28 of the Constitution. Section 27 says everyone has a right to have access to healthcare services, including reproductive health, and it requires that the state must take reasonable legislative and other measures within its available resources to achieve the progressive realization of each one of these rights. And also that no one may be refused emergency medical treatment. And Section 28 says every child has a right to basic health care services. So this forms the basis upon which the citizens can expect the rights. And it also reminds the state that they've got the obligation, constitutional obligation, to progressively improve the health system so that they are able to give people access, you know, to health care. Now, if that is the case, the question is, why is it that we have an inequitable access to health care? If we look at the data that's available, we see that poor people are less likely to access health care, good health care, despite the fact that they've got a need. If you look at the specialist referral services, you'll find that those are less likely to be available, you know, to the poorest people. The poorest people will be found in the primary health care settings. They'll be found in community hospitals. They'll rarely be found in tertiary hospitals, academic hospitals. You know, not that they are not there, but they are not able to access it at the same level as those people who have resources, those who are endowed economically. Even if they have medical aid, they still are able to use the tertiary care services, particularly those that are academic, especially when there are insurance lapses. You know, then their medical aid lapses, they are able to use the public sector higher level services. And the lowest socioeconomic groups, as well as the poorest, you know, provinces, have very, very unequal access to health care. They don't get access to health care as they need it. If you live in the Western Cape, you are likely to be able to get better care. If you live in Gauteng, you are likely to get better health care. But if you live in the rural provinces of the Eastern Cape or the rural provinces of Limpopo, you are likely to get, you know, the worst access, you know, to health care. And part of it is because of challenges that are related to the cost of traveling to get to a facility. Facilities are not very close to where they live. They have to travel very far. Sometimes they have to pay money out of their pockets in order to be able to access health care, and that really makes it very difficult for them. The other thing is that this is possible because the medical scheme contributions are not affordable to them, so they cannot see a GP. Even if there's a GP that's around, they've got to pass that GP and travel very far to get to the clinic where they can try to get health care for free. The other challenge that they have that creates problems with regard to inequitable access to health care is staff morale. The morale of staff and the attitude of staff sometimes are of really serious concern. Staff may be unhappy about, you know, the working conditions that they have, and that may translate itself also to the attitudes that they have towards patients, and that makes it very difficult for patients who are supposed to receive services from people who feel that way, that their morale is very low and they have very low attitude and negative attitude, you know, towards them. So I did mention earlier on about the fact that, you know, by not having medical schemes, being enrolled in a medical scheme, it does create a challenge in terms of having access to health care. And we do see there that on the slide that 16% of South Africans actually have medical care, medical aid. Now, what should South Africa do with regard to inequitable access to health care? Well, as we traveled around the country and listening to many people from different walks of life, we understood them to say clearly that they would prefer that we have a national health insurance. There was a very strong submission that was made by COSATU, but with many, many others who made the submission that they really thought that national health insurance should actually be implemented as a matter of urgency. Some saying that it was necessary that it actually be implemented so that we can ensure that services are available to the poor people. But there was no unanimity with regard to the population's views, you know, on that, even though the overwhelming majority of South Africans indeed said that they wanted national health insurance. There were some written submissions which came in from First Rand, from Econex, and South African Institute of Race Relations and MediClinic, who indicated that, you know, perhaps there are too many risks of actually having a national health insurance, that there will be some funding challenges that will be inherent in the implementation of an NHI model, as it was articulated in the white paper, the government white paper on national health insurance, which is already policy for the country. So we just want to make sure that we do present, you know, the two views that were there, but I want to say that this was a minority view in terms of those written submissions. The overwhelming submissions from the general public when we're traveling around the 9 provinces was that they wanted to have national health insurance. But despite all of that, there was consensus that NHI, if it's to be useful in the country, it must meet the following 8 principles. One was the right to access health care. That was considered to be important because already the Constitution, as I indicated, has indicated that as a requirement, that the state must be able to provide that. The second one is social solidarity, that the national health insurance should provide financial risk pooling to enable cross-subsidization between the young and the old, the rich and the old, as well as the healthy and the sick. So in other words, to take care of each other as South Africans, we needed to have this social solidarity principle that is actually guiding the development of the national health insurance. The third principle was that of equity and the belief that the people have of South Africa is that NHI should ensure a fair and just health care system for all. So in other words, it's not a service that's only for the few, but it's a service for all, and those that are in need of it, who are ill, should be able to get services first and make sure that, you know, they get well. And then the fourth one is healthcare as a public good. Here the idea is for the healthcare should be seen as a social investment and not as a commodity. It shouldn't be sold like any other product, but it must be treated very much like a social investment because there are benefits that arise from getting good quality health care. And then in terms of affordability, the principle requires that the health services should be procured at a reasonable cost. If the cost is prohibitive, then we will not be able to offer a national health insurance for the whole country. We also heard that the principle of efficiency is endorsed in the sense that the healthcare resources should be allocated and utilized in a manner that optimizes value, you know, for money. And the panel was very clear with the fact that it's important that there must be a way of ensuring that the resources that are allocated to national health insurance are used appropriately. And hence, they were proposing some of the structures which I might touch on in terms of strategic purchasing. And then effectiveness was another principle where the healthcare interventions which are covered under NHI must result in desired and expected outcome in every setting. In other words, if you travel to every part of the health system, when you go to any health facility, you must be able to see that the health system is set up in a way that will enable better treatment of the same condition. In other words, you can't go to Dizani and get treatment for TB that will be less inferior to treatment that you'll be able to get in Cape Town. And finally, appropriateness, where the healthcare services should be delivered at appropriate levels of care through an innovative service delivery model and should be tailored to local needs. So in other words, you should take into account the social and cultural issues within that particular area as you deliver the services. Now, in line with that consensus that we reached, you know, in the summit, I just came out from the gender summit, the health summit, and some summit out. So, in line with the consensus that was reached by the health panel, there were some recommendations that were made. The first recommendation, 2.16 in the report, if you look at that report, it says, Parliament should express its support for the introduction of a system of universal health care coverage underpinned by the principles that were articulated, which I've just articulated. And those principles obviously are access to health care as a right, social solidarity, equity, health care as a public good, social investment, and affordability, efficiency, effectiveness, and appropriate levels of care, which I've gone through in greater detail. The idea is that Parliament should support for the introduction of such a system. There was also a discussion in the panel of the importance of having a patient information system. The concern that was there is that, you know, we don't have one health system in the country. In other words, you are not getting the same standard of care across the country, whether public and private, and we need to make sure that we do have such a system. Now, you cannot have such a system without a national patient information system, which will enable you to monitor whether the services are being provided the same way in both areas, and they are provided to the people who require it. So in other words, we need a system to monitor equitable service provision. So there should be that national patient information system that will track patients as they travel through the health system across the country. And it should have information that will give us, you know, those things that particularly you in Parliament will be interested in to find out, are we eradicating the history of apartheid in terms of race and access to care? Are we dealing with the gender issues in terms of sex, you know, of the people that are receiving it, the gender of the people that are receiving it? What about the age distribution? What about whether you belong to a medical aid or you don't belong to a medical aid? Where do you live, in the rural area or urban area, and the public or private facility and socioeconomic status? So these are the variables that we say they must be legislated. So every data system should at least give us that, so we'll be able to find out as to whether are we ending this inequity and inequality that we see in access to good quality health services. And the data from the public and private sector should be collected and be put in one database so that the patients can be able to access their records regardless of where they are. The other thing that we dealt with was the question of community-based care. There was a concern that we are really not moving very well in terms of community-based care. And community-based care in primary health care can be delivered better if at all we roll out the program on ward-based outreach teams, that is the community health worker program. That program is critical because international evidence has shown us very clearly that community health workers make a contribution to improve health outcomes. And that contribution is considerable. They do because of the fact that they focus on the preventive and promotive health services. So they reduce the burden of the health system in terms of seeing people for things that they can be able to do at the home level. And there is a concern that we have not moved rapidly in the country in terms of ensuring community health workers are implemented. And also, we had a discussion and came to the conclusion that the long-term sustainability of a universal health system would have to be linked very closely with the effectiveness of the preventive promotive interventions, particularly in relation to the growing morbidity related to non-communicable diseases. And community health workers can play a critical role of helping to train those people that are at home to test themselves, to know when the blood sugar is high, to know when the blood pressure levels are high, you know, and so forth. To that extent, we made a recommendation as a panel 2.17 that we recommended that Parliament, it should introduce legislation to allow for community health workers to be formally employed in the public health system and be based at all primary health care levels. So this is a recommendation that we're making, which are much, much stronger. So I talked earlier on about the question of data. We made a recommendation on that one, and I just want to say that we said to Parliament that to ensure that Parliament should introduce legislation that is going to create an integrated and comprehensive data on resources and services in the public and private sector, which is routinely updated and is publicly available. Of course, we are not saying that confidential data that involves, you know, identifiers should be made publicly available. No, we are not saying that. We are saying that we need to be able to look at the trends in both the public and private sector. This is the direction that we had a health summit not very long two weeks ago, and that health summit concluded that we need one health system in the country. And this is what they are talking about when they say they need one health system in the country. Make sure that we all are able to get the same level of health services in the country, properly resourced. We are not talking about downgrading what we have, but we are talking about improving to the higher level what we have. The second recommendation related to the question of the medical aid schemes. The medical aid schemes were complaining very much. They say that there is this concern that there is a requirement that has been set up by the Department of Health and by the Medical Schemes Council that that each medical aid must retain 25% of annual expenditure in reserve. And they are complaining, and they are saying that there's so much money that is actually sitting that they are not investing. If they were able to invest that, it would have helped a lot. And the reason for that was because there were too many medical schemes that were going bankrupt. So they wanted to make sure that, you know, the medical schemes actually have a reserve and they do not fail to deliver the services that they want to deliver. Now, in re-evaluating what is happening now, there is a concern that perhaps that we should re-evaluate that situation to establish whether the risks can be more efficiently managed, that the capital must be utilized and the fees, you know, to the consumer must be reduced. So there is an important point that they are mentioning that re-look at this issue, and I'm sure the Council of Medical Schemes here will probably be able to look at that. The second recommendation related to the question of quality. So far I have been talking about access to care very much and with a few hints here on quality, but this section now starts dealing with some of the issues related to quality. We all know the challenges of the health system in terms of the quality of the services that are being provided. We all agree that there is a crisis in the health system, that it actually needs to be improved. And the meetings that have been taking place in the country on the 24th of August, as well as the health summit, where there was a presentation that was made, you know, by the first one, by the president, and the second one by the deputy president, they indicated very clearly that the health system is in a crisis. Everyone must admit the fact that there is a crisis, because it's only when you admit you've got a crisis that you can do something about it. So the idea now was to have that summit to actually address what needs to be done. But that came in after we've had this situation. We did look at the high-level panel report as we're preparing the summit. So that's why I'm linking the two, is because we have that. Now, in order to sort out the health system, we need to improve the quality by building the institutional and management infrastructure and skill levels of the public health sector. That needs to be done. The other issue we recommended was that why not centralize allocation of healthcare resources and maybe investigate it before you actually roll it out and see how well it will work. Because currently when the resources leave the national and go to the provinces, the premiers might decide to allocate health money elsewhere. So you end up not addressing the things that health is supposed to address. So they are saying that look at this issue of centralizing allocation of healthcare resources, because it might actually help a lot in terms of making sure the health money that has been allocated actually goes to health services. Then establish a public agency outside of the Department of Health so that it can strategically purchase the services, it can ensure that the quality of health services are good, and also it can do whatever is necessary to improve the quality of health care. Indeed, we already have a quality assurance body called the Office of Health Standards Compliance, whose responsibility is obviously to inspect the facilities to make sure that they have those infrastructural issues that would make it possible for them to deliver the services, as well as the planning and management of the facilities. In terms of strategic purchasing, this is something that is now becoming global. People are now beginning to say, we can't keep just approving budgets and budgets. We must actually start, first of all, separating the policy making from the provision of services and the funding from the provision of services. So what they are saying basically is that on strategic purchasing, if you have a national health insurance fund or a universal health cover, whichever it is you call it, you must be able to take the money, allocate it to specific service providers on a contractual basis. So in other words, when you set up a contract, you say, for this money that I'm giving you, I expect you to deliver this outcome. I'm not just giving you a budget so that every year you know you've got a budget, but that budget that you have must be enable you to deliver the following things and at this level of quality. So it's strategically purchasing services. That's a fundamental change from the way in which the health system is running now. And that is a proposal that we have. And we also thought that they should build more healthcare infrastructure, such as hospitals and clinics. Clinics are being built, but at a slower pace. In the first 5 years of government, we build a whole lot more clinics than it is currently possible to build. And we need to understand why, and we need to go back and re-look at that situation to say, why was it possible in the first 5 years to build about 700 clinics? And now, after that, it's very difficult to get to that level that quickly. What is it that is happening? So they're saying we should look at that. The other thing is that some of the places like Gauteng have not had a new public hospital in a very, very long time. They've not built a new public hospital. They've stayed with the same hospitals for a very long time. Very, very few of those public hospitals were actually erected. We need more of those public hospitals because the population has grown tremendously. And then allow and encourage the private sector to train and employ doctors and nurses within strict guidelines to alleviate acute shortages. The concern was that some of the doctors that have been trained and the nurses that have been trained were not able to obtain jobs simply because there was not enough budget within the public sector to be able to appoint them. So they were saying, why not employ them in the private sector? But they must have strict guidelines of how they're supposed to train them and how they're supposed to employ them so that we can alleviate some of the acute shortages of healthcare providers in the country. In conclusion for this section, before I come into, you know, further other issues, is that although there's some improvement in reducing the triple challenges, the apartheid legacy remains. So I'm sorry, let me leave this one. Sorry, it crept in. So the next issue that we want to address on the quality of healthcare is really the substantial differences in utilization of health services across socioeconomic groups and geographical areas. I touched on that earlier. And then I said some of the things that we need to be addressing are the facilities, the human resources, the essential medicines. The lower socioeconomic groups will find that they are in the poorest provinces, but they have got the worst access because of the fact that the facilities are inadequate, the human resources are inadequate, and sometimes there are major stockouts, you know, of essential medicines. And for that reason, we made a recommendation that we must build the institutional and management infrastructure and skill levels of the public sector, that we must try also to decentralize the management authority to individual public sector hospitals and health district or district level for primary health care services. The concern is that so many people within the provinces who want to deliver the services find that they cannot because something is missing, a roof is leaking. And for them to fix that roof, they must go to the province instead of from the clinic or the hospital. They must go to the province and ask for permission to use the money to be able to do what they want to do. But if you decentralize everything, you'd give them the authority, the power, and the responsibility to be able to fix the system. So we need to change the way in which we manage these facilities by making sure that those who are in the coal phase have got the power to be able to deliver the services and fix the health system as they wish to do that. We talked earlier about centralization of allocation of healthcare resources. It was made as a recommendation. And then, of course, we talked about the issues of purchasing. So that's a bit of a repeat there. Now, there was one big argument that we had which took quite a lot of time for us. This was the question of the medical schemes, whether there should be an open medical, whether they should be voluntary or should they be mandatory. But let's start understanding what is the situation now before we can even address the challenge. One is that currently any person, regardless of employment status, can join an open medical scheme and they are required to accept them. If I work for a particular company, you know, I have to join that medical scheme that company has. Okay? If I don't join it, then I've got a problem, especially if I end at a certain income level. An employment person whose employer does not have a designated medical scheme for employees can join an open scheme, so meaning that they can join any other scheme that would allow them, you know, to do so. And then an employed person can become a member of a scheme as part of the contract. So if you have a contract, they can say, well, you are allowed to be able to join it. And, of course, it's also common practice in the industry for employment agreement of employees to offer a panel of schemes to choose from. Sometimes they have like 3 or 4 schemes that they say you can select which one that you actually want. And in the employer-employee agreement, employees are entitled to negotiate whether cover should be mandatory or voluntary. Some agreements allow for voluntary membership while others allow for mandatory. So there's a lot of variation in the medical schemes. So there was a debate in the panel, and the two positions that were taken was that we should really put together this in front of Parliament so that they can decide on how they want to handle it. The first recommendation was that medical schemes should be mandatory for the employed. And the reason for that is that they felt that they would be able to subsidize the poor while the proposed National Health Insurance Fund can focus on the poor. So they were saying create a two-tier system where you allow the employed to be compelled to pay for themselves through a medical scheme. and then leave the national health insurance for the poor. And that in itself, they thought that it was consistent with this program, you know, where the Department of Health is, well, let's focus first on the NHI, on women, on children, and the elderly and disabled, and leave everyone else to continue to obtain care, either in the public sector normally or, you know, have medical aid. And they argued that it would speed up universal health cover for all. The next recommendation that was made was that we are better off with a voluntary membership for medical schemes, because the evidence that we have suggests that mandatory insurance for the employed leads to inequality between the employed and the unemployed, and also within the employed population. So in other words, within the employed group, if you have more money, you get a better medical scheme. If you have less money, you get a low-end medical scheme. And that in itself, it creates inequality amongst the workers. And if you are unemployed, it simply means that you are not able to get access to quality health care in terms of prepayment of the health care. So there are clear lessons for us when we look at what is happening internationally, particularly from Latin America, from Germany, and all these other countries, South Korea and so forth, that started with a system where they covered only the employees and left out the others. They found that it was very difficult sometimes to actually move now to cover everyone, because those who have, you know, the employees who have now start agitating that, no, keep us separate. We are okay. You know, we don't care about the other people, yeah, because I work for my money, so why should I really be caring about other people? So that principle of social solidarity cannot be implemented if you go in the area of mandatory medical schemes. So we learned from South Africa that it would be better for us to make this recommendation also that South Africans should be allowed to, you know, decide whether they want to have medical aid or not, and not be forced to have medical aid. So the recommendation that we made to address this issue is that the panel recommended that Parliament set up an independent task team of all the relevant players in the public and private sectors to evaluate whether there should be legislation passed regarding voluntary or mandatory membership of medical scheme for the implementation of NHI to ensure that high-quality, affordable health care is delivered to all South Africans, regardless of race, income level, and geography. So we thought that we should pass the buck here onto Parliament to decide on that, because we couldn't come to one agreement within the panel. Then there was an issue of maldistribution of healthcare professionals. There was a very concern that there are many, many health professionals who are working in the private sector who could actually contribute to improve quality service and to improve access to quality health care in the public health care. But the challenge is the distribution of the private health professionals. Unfortunately, many of them are located in the urban areas, particularly the metropolitan areas. The rural areas, that's where we found that we could not get enough, you know, medical doctors. We really would love to be able to get medical doctors in the private sector that are working to ensure that the population actually gets access to healthcare. But it was not only on the question of healthcare professionals where there were disparities in terms of maldistribution. There were also problems with regard to community pharmacies. The community pharmacies, we found that most of those are located within particular provinces in urban areas, and they were not so much available in the rural areas. And the density of these pharmacies was 8 times higher in the least deprived districts than in the most, not in the most deprived ones, but in the most resourced ones. Now, the disparities in the distribution of these pharmacies make it difficult to draw on the private sector health professional resources to improve access in terms of quality health care, particularly to the underserved areas. And for that reason, we made a recommendation, which is the last recommendation we made, that Parliament should enact legislation that requires that the National Health Act regulations are developed and promulgated in order to introduce a certificate of need of newly certified professionals to ensure that the underserved populations access quality health care, particularly medical specialists. So, yes, it is a controversial one, but it's necessary to have a certificate of need in order to be able to redistribute the professionals that we have. And finally, to regulate the licenses for pharmacies to ensure that new ones are located where the need is. And of course, this can be done if at all you amend the Medicines and Related Substance Control Act as well as the Pharmacy Act. So that is what the panel had to come up with, and we are available to answer the questions if necessary.
No, it is going to be necessary, Prof. Thank you very much for a very clear, straightforward, a very profound presentation of the high level panel. Honourable members, there is the presentation. Questions, Honourable Wilson. Okay, still Honourable Wilson at the stage. Honourable James. Honourable Wilson's head is obstructing me.
Okay.
Fine. No. It's Honourable Wilson, Honourable James. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for your presentation. But I do have questions, and one of the, I'm going to start, let's go back to the beginning. I think one of the situations that we are facing here, and I think this is probably one of the hindrances, that indeed we have decreased adult mortality and decreased infant under five mortality. We have a growing, very fast-growing citizenship in South Africa. Our communities are growing and growing, and as you rightly said, while the population grows, health services have not grown at the same level, and I think that's a serious concern, and I'm glad to see that you've made note of that, because in your constitutionally entrenched health rights, it says that the state must take reasonable legislative and other measures within its available resources to achieve progressive realization of these rights. We do not have the available resources. We are severely, severely under-resourced. And your very next point is no one may be refused emergency medical treatment. Currently, we have one EMS professional, paramedic, to 25,000 South Africans. It's severely challenging, and what has compounded that is that these health professionals, these emergency paramedics, EMS care personnel, started with one course, two courses, three courses, and they worked through a whole range of short courses, and as they did those courses, they built up their qualifications, their expertise to deal with certain things, and rose up through the ranks of the EMS. We now have a situation where all of those short courses have been stopped. They can no longer do short courses. And in order to qualify now, they need to go to universities or specialized colleges. One of those was the CPU team in the Free State. And I raise that particularly because what has happened there now is that 200 students went there to qualify as paramedics and EMS care workers. The curriculum was found not to be desirable, and none of those students can now be certified. And we're getting a lot of complaints with regards to lots and lots of people who over the years, and over many years, have done lots of EMS short courses and built themselves up, who can now no longer offer their services as a medical, as emergency medical care personnel, which they do voluntarily in most cases because they do care about those communities, because they are no longer recognized as professionals. That is a concern for me. Two issues. Equity, NHI will ensure a fair and just health system, care system for all, but at the bottom of that page, appropriateness. And it says there that healthcare services will be delivered at appropriate levels of care through innovative service deliveries models and will be tailored to local needs. We do not have the appropriate levels of healthcare. And I'll give you an example. In Limpopo, where I come from, I visited a clinic last week where three babies were born on the weekend by the light of a cell torch on a cell phone. There was no electricity. There was no water. The fecal monitor and sonars were not working. There was not an incubator. And the suction machine was not working. One of those babies was born in severe distress because it could not be monitored en route, transported from from Mokopong to Mogalakwena. That baby died because they were unable to pick up that it should have actually been born by cesarean section because of its level of distress and not by a normal person. And it was born by the torchlight of a cell phone. Those kind of things will ensure. We would all love to see a national health insurance. And we do care about our communities. And I'm terribly concerned when I hear that members of my community have been subjected to treatment like they were in a local clinic. We have to look at the resources first, because you cannot institute an NHI if you don't have the adequate resources to do it. And one of the issues that you've raised here is getting private sector professionals to assist in the public sector, particularly in the rural areas. We currently sit on 56 billion rands worth of medical and malpractice claims in this country. That's excluding the legal fees. We visit those hospitals on a regular basis, and in fact we did in KwaZulu-Natal just recently as a portfolio, and some of the conditions we uncovered there were quite horrific. You will not encourage private sector health professionals to go and work in the public health sector when they've got to work under those conditions and expose themselves to potential malpractice cases because they are going to be faced because they can't work in an area where it's under-resourced, where there is no fecal monitor, where machinery is not working, where, and we picked this up on our visit in KwaZulu-Natal, is that we went into a clinic where the machines had not been calibrated or checked for 4 years. So we had no idea whether or not those things, although they were working, whether they were correctly calibrated and giving the right information. So we face two situations. We're severely under-resourced. 75% of some of the budgets in the provinces are going to COE. There is no money for infrastructure. There is no money for building hospitals. There is no money for properly equipping health facilities. Poverty has increased. We are now have the highest unemployed levels ever in this country, or in a very, very long time, let me put it that way. So we've got one situation being created and another situation collapsing as a result. And I think a lot more needs to be done, and I know you have said this. I'm just giving my take on this. We can't progressively improve our health system without progressively improving the resources and the infrastructure. And I'm very, very pleased, very, very pleased that you agree that the health system is in a critical situation and on the verge of collapse. Chair, that's probably more of a statement than a question, but I will come back to questions if we get another opportunity. Thank you.
Honourable James? Okay, just for you, Professor, we'll take the whole round of questions and then you'll respond after. Honourable James?
Thank you, Chair.
I don't think amongst us there's anyone who can refuse universal health care to our communities. And we are well aware of that health is in a crisis. And I think this high panel has made very good recommendations in terms of, and in fact, I'll choose one. First, before I get there, just to get from you, how long do you think NHI can, you know, can be implemented? Because it has been, oh, it has been NHI for many years. And when will it ever be implemented? How will it remain a pilot forever? Especially looking at the challenges that it faces, you know, the staff, the you name it. How long will it remain a pilot? Because our people are really desperately needed. That is the first thing. The second one, it's just a comment. I fully support the community health workers program. No country can rely on curative only. It is too expensive. There has to be prevention. There has to be. We can never, never, and also management of how do people manage their illnesses. But having said that, I support community health workers, especially in public health facilities. It's precisely because people don't know how to manage. If they have high blood pressure, they don't know how to manage it. They're diabetic, they don't know how to use, you know, how do they inject themselves, you know, when do they take their medication, including, you know, all the NCDs. People really need more education or advice on how to use it, and also monitoring if, you know, if there are problems, so that there's communication between the people and the health facilities. I would also add on and say they also should be upskilled so that they can be able to address the current challenges that our communities are facing. For instance, we have drugs in our communities. Our poor communities, sometimes they it takes them long to understand that, you know, my child is using drugs. They think the child is sick, you know, they think all sorts of things because they don't know. No one ever educates them that, you know, when your child presents with this, that child is using drugs. So we need a lot of more health education, more health advisors. People know, and even those that are in can be able to manage their health without them going for petty illnesses, you know, to the clinics. So I fully support the community of us. In fact, I've been you know, fighting for them from 2014. I'm glad that they are a recommendation here. It's really I'm very excited about it. Thank you so much.
Honourable Minister.
Thank you. Well, thanks for the presentation, which was very informative and very well thought of. But I have a feeling that we want to eat our cake and still have it, which creates a contradiction. And if the contradictions are not well resolved, and the idea is that if you try to have contradictions reconciled and not negate one to the other, the status quo, you're going to have a perpetual struggle, and that is not going to be very helpful with an NHI. NHI is supposed to cover everybody, regardless. Health is a right, a constitutional right. But if you still want to to have an elitist grouping somewhere, so you can have your own medical schemes. You know, those who have will always victimize those who do not have. So if we have a national health insurance, which is compulsory for everybody, and we have a health tax to cover everybody, you can go where you want and go and get your treatment at any time, all right? But with the insurance pay, if you let individuals pay, you can always pay an extra for an extra consideration. So like having your cake and trying to eat it. If you want to level the playing field, you don't say there are those who are more equal than others. If you have a means, we tax you according to your means, and you still get the best treatment like everybody else. And especially if you are going to have emphasis on preventative than curative type of treatment, then you need to spend most resources on the preventative side, health, primary health care, and to have polyclinics or communal health centers instead of emphasizing on regional and tertiary health centers. Those must be there to train and deal with specialized type of situations which cannot be dealt with at polyclinic level or at the community health center level. So instead of having clinics here and there, we may have health community health centers which will try to cover almost everything and cover everybody. And because they will be of high caliber and well-stocked and well-equipped, it will help alleviate the elitist type of separation and causing contradiction in the same health delivery system. And of course, we also train according to need. We will not just train people and say, well, go to school, universities, will train and train and train, and at the end you have no job and you want to handpick where you want to go and work. But if we train per need, we know that we are training 10 doctors, we need 10 doctors, or we are going to need 12 in 2 years, we train 15, right? So then we are not wasteful in what we want to achieve. But since you say that the parliament will have to deal with all these things, we just want to say be alert to what is really going to be a no holy cow type of situation to give everybody what needs to be given according to the constitution, not according to your pocket. Thank you.
Honorable Mashallah, and then it will be Honorable Jafta.
No, thanks, Chair, and let's welcome the report and the presentation of the High Panel. One of the observations that is made by the panel is that the challenge in terms of utilization of specialist referral services, which is very
You are a bit soft.
I mean, just the mic is not me. I'm saying one of the observations is that the use of health services is the lowest, especially amongst the poorest. Despite that there's a huge need on their side. And that also includes the referral to specialists as well, which is inequitable. And one of the reasons is because it means health services is not accessible to most of the people who are poor, especially in the rural areas. how would the implementation of the National Health Insurance address this matter? Because of the challenge that it's not accessible, it's very far. So if you implement national health insurance, how will it address that matter of accessibility? Because it's not going to change the socio-economic conditions of those people. They will remain poor, even if there is NHI. And therefore, the hindrance that makes it difficult for them to access health care services will still be there because of the socio-economic condition that they find themselves in. And then the challenge of the staff morale, how will NHI address that matter? Because it's a big problem, the issue of the morale of the health workers. Because I don't get what are the causes in the report. Why is that beyond the condition? Is it the condition of service? And if there is a condition of service, what needs to be done to improve that condition of service? Does it relate to salary? Does it relate to the infrastructure that they find themselves? So that we're able, therefore, to make sure that these interventions, and we're able, therefore, to create that environment that enables them to have conducive environment, that enables them to raise their morale and be able to do their work happily, and then be able to provide the service that the community needs. The issue of affordability, vis-a-vis the proposal that the mandatory part of medical scheme. Mandatory. How do you balance that mandatory vis-a-vis affordability? Because the biggest problem or hindrance now it's the issue of affordability of medical scheme, and as a result of that, therefore. Because it's not affordable, then people are unable to join. And then now, if it becomes mandatory, how do you deal with that? Then the other challenge is around the issue of health professionals. Having to be made, the health professional having unwillingness to work in the rural areas because of the conditions there, which is not conducive for them, because they've got families, they've got children, and they will want to be with their families, their children, and you find that the conditions, be it your schooling, be it your infrastructure, related issues, are not conducive for them to be staying there with their families. And as a result, they will then prefer to be in cities as opposed to be in rural areas. And then when we then say we must be able to to make professionals be drawn into or make it mandatory for them to work in the, to be distributed evenly in throughout the country. And then how does it become practical, especially in the context of the socio-economic situation that we find ourselves and the unevenness of development of South Africa as a country. And then the vis-a-vis their rights to decide where they want to stay and where they want to work and all other related matters. And then on the community health workers, we agree with the proposal, except that I'm not sure whether it requires legislation for community workers to be absorbed into the system, because if you take a decision to absorb them, they then become part of the public service, and then they get absorbed in terms of the public service law and the Labor Relations Act. Why would you require a special dispensation for them as opposed to the general health practitioners' employment processes to be part of the system? Because legislation will take long while you can take a decision tomorrow and then implement it the following day, as opposed to undergoing a legislative process. Because if we say, no, we must put a legislation, we can't even have a legislation in this term, which means we will be postponing the implementation, which can take 2 to 3 years if we were to wait for the legislation. But if you take a policy position on the matter, you can begin to implement it tomorrow. And then move forward with it without having to go under a particular legislation. Maybe there's a specific reason why the panel felt there must be a particular legislation that focuses on them, so that at least we understand why we need a particular dispensation for them outside the normal processes of all the public servants or health professionals processes of employing them in the health sector. And then lastly, Chair, just to check the views of the panel, maybe not necessarily the views of the panel, but the views of Dr. Susanna herself on the matter of a rising cost of medical schemes vis-a-vis the mandate of the medical council. Whether the medical council schemes can have the authority to curb the high rising cost of medical schemes, so that then we're able then to ensure its affordability at the end of the day. Thanks very much.
From my side, just
No, thanks, Chair. I think I'm covered by Honorable Mashlaila, because I also just wanted to check the view of the panel on what can be done to boost the morale and also improve the attitude of the staff. I'm covered. Thanks very much.
I when I went through the document, even the thicker one, I haven't, maybe my expectations are very ambitious from the panel, that my view is that there were things that the panel should have, which are immediate in terms of the health sector, and those that will need legislation. I'm raising this within the context of the low morale and the state of the health sector. It's a known fact that management and leadership in the health sector is the key. And I don't pick it up. I may have missed it, but I don't pick it up from the panel and even in the recommendations. What is it that you are putting across for Parliament as it's overseeing the department? What is it that we are to do? Because as we are seated here now, there are, Honourable Wilson have raised the challenges that are happening. I've just received an SMS, two babies have died in a particular province because there was no oxygen. So all that is about, what is it that you unfortunately now you are not there, that you think that as Parliament we are to do, because I don't think, in my view, it's all about resources. It's also about lack of leadership. If workers are not led and managed, they will have. So it's both. What is it that is making? What then should be the role of workers and that of management in ensuring that the sector is improving, with the understanding that there's the Office of Health Standard Compliance, which then has got that responsibility as it conducts its inspection, but as this high-level panel in relation to the second one, Prof, is that the health sector is in a dire strain because population has increased. But in that population, there's something that has always been said. I don't know whether it arose at the time, that the sector is allegedly being accused that it is not providing proper health care to foreign nationals that are in our country. Did you, as you were conducting these public hearings, did it come up, and what is it that what is it that you think that as the country we should improve? That's why I'm saying it's alleged, because even when there are those allegations, the times when they are followed up, it's always been found that no, this is the. It was just a misunderstanding. What we will do, we will just break for 5 minutes for members to just have a bite, even yourself if you want to, and then we then allow you, so that also give you space to okay, at least 10 minutes will suffice. I see that Honorable Wilson wanted to say something, which I don't encourage, but it's fine. Ask.
It's a simple question to you, Chair. If there are no other questions, I have a final question. So if we want to give the final question now and answer all of them, but I don't know if any of the other portfolio members have further questions. I was just asking, do you want me to give my last question now, or would you prefer to wait for the break?
No, you can. If you want to ask, you can ask now.
Thank you. It's very straightforward. In all of your recommendations, the one recommendation is that is not there, and it's the one thing that hinders health the most, is the recommendations on the fact that budgets need to be reassessed. The health budget was cut by 9 billion rand, which has had a severe impact on the health sector. Not only on the health sector, because a sick sick people can't work, sick children can't learn. So when you can't offer health services, it has a ripple effect from children being stunted to all of these kind of things. There's no recommendations in here about prioritizing health and the reasons why it should be prioritized and the reasons why its budget needs to seriously be reassessed. And the other one I wanted to raise, and I thank you, Chair, because you raised a very important issue here, and it was also mentioned in the AG report, is that of leadership. The one serious concern in the AG's report, that the biggest struggle, one of their biggest struggles was that there was a total lack of leadership, capacity, and ability to manage. And I think that that's important, and again, that recommendation is not there. Thank you, Chair. That's all I wanted to add. Thank you.
Okay, 10 minutes break, then we come and allow Prof to respond. If members want another round, that would be fine for me. Thank you.